out on a shout. That's the motto of the RNLI. But what does that really mean? What happens when that pager goes off? And how does it feel waiting to be rescued?
I can actually still recall Malachy above me saying, stay calm, it's going to be all right. You're going to get through this. This is not your time to die.
While the RNLI turns 200 this year, one of the oldest lifeboat stations in Ireland is 140 years old. So many things have changed for the RNLI on Arranmore since then, but the one thing that never changes is the courage and dedication of lifeboat volunteers who, without a thought for their own safety, go to help others in difficulty. Launched with the Arranmore RNLI, Gerry Early explains how it feels to be part of the crew.
Even though we don't really see it as life-saving or saving lives, we don't see it as that, I have to say that, but it is. We don't clap each other on the back. But deep down, you know that you've helped somebody. And, you know, I was asked a question not so long ago, how many times the boat or had the call-outs been more or less than it was 15 years ago? And my answer was, if the boat never gets called out, I'm happy, because that means there's nobody in trouble.
Launch authority John McCafferty says without the support of family, they wouldn't be able to do what they do.
You know, it does take a lot. It takes dedication and time and commitment, but it's all worth it when you come home after a successful job and you know somebody's going home that day or that night because of your actions and your crew's actions. So very, very worthwhile job, I have to say.
You never know when you're going to get that call, though, do you?
No, it can be 24/7, 365. It just comes when you least expect it. You know, you could have things planned with family and if, you know what, maybe they don't get enough recognition. I know my wife has threatened to divorce me 10 times, but again, fantastic support there, and without their support, which is just as important, I think, you know, we couldn't do what we do.
One of the many call-outs that the Arranmore crew has been involved in was a dramatic sea cave rescue last September. Kayaker Malachy Doyle would spend several hours there wondering if anyone would come to his aid. He describes the moment his quiet kayak turned into a living nightmare.
As I turned the kayak sort of broadside to the mouth of the cave, this massive wave, which to me felt like a freak wave because there hadn't been any waves, but this massive wave hit me and threw both me and the kayak deep, threw me out of the kayak and threw us both deep into the cave. So there I was in the water, hanging on for dear life to the kayak and the paddle. I managed to roll the kayak back upright, but it was full of water basically, and I couldn't control it. There was no way I could get into it. So that was hairy. I was in the water then for a long time trying to get into the kayak, and I just couldn't.
What was going through your head at that time?
Well, strangely, I mean, I was thinking, I need to get in. I don't want to let go of the kayak because it's floating and I don't know how long I can float without it. And anyway, you know, I knew I couldn't swim out of the cave and back to safety. I was really worried that I was going to get thrown hard against the side of the rocks and, you know, break an arm or a leg or back of my head or something. I can actually still recall Malachy above me saying, stay calm, it's going to be all right. You're going to get through this. This is not your time to die. You know, I can still see that moment, you know. And so I thought, okay, just work it out. What do you need? You need to get out of the water, basically. I just kicked the kayak away. I thought, right, I'm out. And I pulled myself up on that rock and managed to get up onto a very narrow ledge, about 6 to 8 feet above the water. And that's where I stayed for the next 3 to 4 hours, I think.
Luckily, Malachy had his phone in a watertight pouch and would eventually be able to make a call to the local fire service, which sparked a major multi-agency rescue operation. After hours of searching, a decision was taken to search the local caves. 19-year-old JJ O'Donnell was one of the Ornellay crewmen who would ultimately rescue Malachy.
I was literally about to sit down for my dinner at the time and the pager went off. So we headed to the station anyway, and we got out and we got reports that it was a man on a rock at the time, a kayaker like. And we were launched, and Rescue 118 was launched, and local fisher boats were out there too, and Bumbeg Coast Guard were there. And we searched all of Owy, and we couldn't see any sign of him. And we searched surrounding islands like Gull Island and all them, and we didn't know where he was. So then what the mechanic on the boat at the time said, we should check the caves just to see, because it's a pretty popular place for tourists and all that. For kayakers, like, and one of the local fishermen heard him because he was shouting into the cave, and there was a good swell on there at the time. It was challenging conditions, as it were. And the Bunbeg Coast Guard sent in a drone, and we were able to locate the kayak itself, and it was overturned, but we weren't able to locate Malachy himself, the casualty. So eventually, the coxswain decided that me and Evan O'Donnell would be sent in the wee Y boat, which is a wee inflatable dinghy we have on the lifeboat, which can be launched for like shallow waters or tight spots, as it were. And it was a big team effort because we had to get the timing perfectly right to actually go in to the cave. And we eventually did get in, and we located him and we got him on board.
Malachy, who after hours of waiting to be rescued, was now in severe danger of hypothermia setting in. Reflecting on the ordeal, he says he's lucky to be alive.
You know, the sea was nearly to the top of the mouth of the cave, so the tide had to turn, the sea had to settle a bit, and then they could get in to rescue me. Before that, they put a drone in. Suddenly I saw this red light, and there was this, well, I thought, what is this? I actually thought, I think it was while I was singing Raglan Road, and you're almost hallucinating. You know, I was singing Raglan Road, and then suddenly the spotlight came on. I thought, whoa, I'm on stage. But actually, it was the red light of the drone that Bunbeg, apparently Coast Guard, had sent in to try and actually locate me before they sent a boat in to see where I was. It apparently did spot the overturned kayak and didn't spot me. But so they weren't sure where I was, or if I, or what condition I was in, basically, apart from that I had kept answering the loud hailer. Which at one point I did hear it say, stay calm, 5 minutes. That was one of the best things I've ever heard. So then suddenly in comes young lads, very brave, because the conditions were not good. They came zooming in, spotted, went over, I saw them go over the kayak, and then I yelled, and then they saw me, and they came over to me, still on this ledge. I managed to get down into the boat, the little Y boat.
And how did that feel whenever you finally got into the boat?
Just amazing. I mean, just amazing. I was so grateful. I do remember telling them that right there and then. I said, you're heroes, you know, thank you so much. Because I was very aware, you know, that I was causing other people to risk their lives to get me out of a situation that I'd got myself into very stupidly. I'd made a lot of mistakes.
And were you emotional at all reflecting on after you'd been rescued? Did you reflect on everything that happened? And were you kind of maybe in a state of shock that even happened to you at all?
It was a very shocking thing to happen to me. I mean, I still think about it. I still wake up in the night thinking, oh my goodness, that was such a close call. You know, I could so easily be dead.
Ornellay crews are diverse in many ways. Mickey McHugh joined at 60 after a career in the local fire service.
When we're putting on our dry suits, when you go on the Y boat, you don't know what you're going to expect. And the adrenaline, you're actually shaking with adrenaline, and because you don't know what you're going to run into, and, you know, hope. And you pray to God that everything's going to go okay, and we were lucky enough it went well that night for us, yeah.
You've had such a long career with the fire service, and this is only kind of a recent enough career, but you've no intentions of retiring from this anytime soon?
No, I'm not quite sure actually when retiring age is. I think it's 65, 66, but I have a few years left in me yet. And JJ, my nephew that rescued the guy, he was one of the guys, him and Evan O'Donnell were on the little Y boat to rescue the guy in the cave. He just started on the lifeboat. And he has a long career in front of him if he stays on the island, like, you know, so problem here is with work and stuff. A lot of the younger lads join the lifeboat and then they can't stay because there's no employment here, not a lot of employment as such. So it's pretty tough to get crew members now.
And that's a shame for not just the RNLI, but for the island itself.
Absolutely, yeah. Their service has been very good for the people of the island. Over the years, a lot of sick people, you know, a lot of actually people in disasters, people that were drowning, were saved by the lifeboat and by the RNLI crews, you know, and to lose it would be an awful shame. But hopefully now, with a bit of employment coming back, with people working from home and all that stuff, it means a lot that we can get younger crew members trained up and get them back on the lifeboat.
And maybe not so young. I mean, look at yourself.
Yeah. Well, I know, yeah. I was a late starter, but I was at sea. I fished when I was younger, and I do kayaking and sailing here on the island. You know, I'm a kayak instructor and that. You know, I love being on the water, so it was like second nature to me, really, to go on the lifeboat. But I'm delighted to be there.
It's estimated that only around 12% of RNLI crew members across Ireland and the UK are women. Nora Flanagan, now retired, had been a crew member for 30 years.
I really didn't know what was involved. The RNLI had put on a first aid course here on the island and they invited anybody from the island to join. My background would be nursing and I was interested in the first aid course. So that went on for 2 weeks, and at the end, the then mechanic said, would anybody like to join the crew? I think he meant the men that was there. But I went up to him and said, I wonder if I could join the crew. He was really good. He didn't blink. And he says, why not? Why not come out and exercise with us? So 2 weeks later, I went out and exercised with them and they took me around the island. And we had the Tyne class lifeboat at the time. It was a smaller boat. But I absolutely loved it. I got such a buzz out of the speed and everything. And I thought, that's it, I can join the crew. And then I had my first call out at 10:30 on a February night. Quite stormy. I went over, got on board the boat, and it was to a man who fell overboard a trawler. It was 20 miles off and quite stormy. We got to the scene and we were searching for the person all night. Unfortunately, he was never found, and all the lads in the boat were doing their thing, operating lights and driving boats and talking boats and everything else. And I was sitting at the back and I thought, this isn't the job for me. I can't do anything. I don't know what I'm doing out here. And we got back at 8:30 the following day and I went to work in the day centre and I was a bit dizzy all day. I was hoping somebody would throw a bucket of water up in the window for me. I was a bit unsteady on my feet. And then about 2:30 that afternoon, the pagers went off again. And I was to help a person who fell on the island. He had head injuries. And I went over to the station and I was able to help the casualty there. And I think I knew then that there was a role for everybody on the boat. And yes, I got great satisfaction from serving on the lifeboat. And of course, the RNLI are a great family to work with. Absolutely incredible.
But not every lifeboat has been established as long as the one on Arranmore Island. The Lough Swilly lifeboat, also in Donegal, was only launched in the late 80s following a campaign spearheaded by well-known musician and songwriter Phil Coulter. His brother drowned there some years before while windsurfing. Phil Coulter was told that if there was a lifeboat there at the time, his brother Brian would have been saved.
Well, to be frank, I knew little or nothing about the RNLI growing up in Derry. You know, we would have been familiar with Lough Swilly. Certainly, we used to rent a little cottage there on the shores of Swilly. And with my brothers and sisters, we'd spend that, you know, 3 or 4 weeks in the summer, and we'd learn to swim in that stretch of water in the Swilly. So we're familiar with the water and all that, but I had no awareness of the RNLI. Only a vague one that there were lifeboats that saved people, you know, out in the middle of the ocean and stuff. It wasn't until, it was a very dramatic and rather tragic event that drew my attention, which was back in 1987. My brother Brian, while windsurfing in the Swilly. The winds changed, the weather changed, it would get very choppy, and he began to get in trouble. Even people on the shore, people on that road from between Fawn and Muncrana could see that there was somebody on a board out there that was in difficulty. Now, because it was that time of year, there were no pleasure boats in the water. There were no boats in the water. And although I think a few people reported to the guards in Muncrana, listen, I think somebody's in trouble out there in the water, there was no, no recourse to sending a boat out to save him. Anyway, not to dwell on the sadness of it, but he was swept out to sea and was drowned. The simple matter is, because he was there in Lough Swilly, visible to the shore, had there been a boat on station, even an inshore, even an inflatable, in a matter of minutes, really, he could have been saved. Well, when I heard that, that kind of galvanized my thinking. I thought, well, Jesus Christ, if that's the case, why is there not a boat in the nearest lifeboat would have been Port Rush, which was, not exactly around the corner. So, cut a long story short, in common with some of my brother Brian's friends and my friends, we started to lobby the RNLI to get a boat on station. I did a couple of concerts to get the startup funds to get it operational. It was certainly one of the proudest days of my life when our first boat, an inflatable, was launched at Ned's Point. In the Swilly, and it was a culmination just of a lot of hard work by decent people who just wanted to make this happen. That was 1988, and the boat has now graduated from being like a small inshore boat to being fully fledged lifeboat. And the last I'd heard, it saved like 40 something lives in the years since 1988. So that's the story of the Lough Swilly boat. That's the story of how I've become involved. And I've been very happy to lend my weight to the RNLI ever since.
Was it a bittersweet moment seeing the boat launch that day in 1988?
Well, I remember it very, very well. In fact, it was the first time I ever heard the hymn For Those in Peril on the Sea. And it was an interdenominational service to bless the boat. And when I heard the choir sing that, I just choked up. To this day, it gives me goosebumps when I hear that hymn. In fact, I recorded it with the orchestra some years ago, and I could barely get through the recording because those waves of that memory just kept flooding over me. It was bittersweet. It was sweet in as much as we had achieved what we had set out to achieve. It was bitter because it wouldn't have been there if I hadn't lost my brother. But since then, as often happens in life, it took something painful to happen before something of consequence actually evolved.
It wasn't something that you were ever asked to do. I suppose it was more of a calling or an expectation that you would do it. And, some good calls and some not so good. You don't tend to remember the good ones, funny enough. But bad ones sort of would sink deeper, but always in the knowledge that we done our best, and that's all you can do. Most times you don't know what the call is, so it could be somebody having a bad cut, needs and stitches, or it could be a boat going aground with all souls in danger. So when you get the call, I think the really, really good ethos, and I can only speak for this station, but I'm sure it's the same all over, is that you don't ask. You just go.
Catherine Gaffney, Ocean FM News.